morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world. And welcome to Information Week Live for the week of April 24th, 2016. I'm Kurt Franklin, executive editor at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. We've got a special episode this week, and I think it's going to be a good one because it's setting us up for something really special that's happening next week, and I've got a lot to tell you about that. In addition, a little bit later on in the show, I'm going to be joined by our international editor, Kelly Sheridan, who will be calling in from somewhere south of the equator. She can tell us all about what she's doing down there and where down there is when she calls in. Now, I'll also be joined in just a short while by Information Week's editor-at-large, Charlie Babcock, who always has some interesting things to say to us. But before we get to them, wanted to let you know about these things that we're going to be doing next week. Now, next week's show is going to be taped because we're going to be putting it together live at the Information Week Elite 100 conference, which is going to be taking place next Monday and Tuesday. That's May 2nd and 3rd at the Four Seasons Resort in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, we've got some really exciting things that are going to be going on there. And I wanted to tell you how to find out about those and about the things that will be happening as well at Interop 2016, which is going to be happening at the same time as the Information Week Elite 100 conference. Now, how does that happen, you ask? Well, here's how it happens. Interop begins with its conference on Monday, May 2nd, and they have great conference sessions aimed primarily at hands-on networking professionals and their managers. Those will be going on for the entire week, Monday through Friday, but they start Monday, go on Tuesday, and then the expo floor opens on Wednesday and stays open through Thursday. So you have 2 days of conference, 2 days of conference, plus the expo, and then Friday, one more day of conference. Now, meanwhile, on Monday and Tuesday, while all of the network pros and their managers are getting together at the Mandalay Bay Convention Center, the CIOs and IT executives will be meeting at the Four Seasons. Now, you probably see a pattern developing here, and I'm not going to tell you that it's wrong. Yeah, this is a great location for this event, which will be going on Monday and Tuesday. And let me tell you a little bit about what's happening there, because the Information Week Elite 100 conference really is all about these IT executives telling their stories. Now, starting about 4 months ago, they submitted entries for the Information Week Elite 100 recognition. And we went through all of the entries we received. We chose our Elite 100. And then, in addition to that, we chose from the 100 the best of the best. And so what we have at the Information Week Elite 100 conference is many of the people who are being recognized as executives at the companies that are the most innovative, the most forward-thinking in terms of making IT part of the business, doing exciting business-forward things with IT. They'll be telling their colleagues and their peers how they did it from the technical side, in other words, which architectures they used, which development disciplines they used, all of that kind of stuff, all the way through the inside information on the sort of sales presentations they had to make internally in order to get these projects approved. And believe me, having heard a lot of these stories, the technical side can be the easy part. In many of these organizations, CIOs are really in a constant battle over budget, both capital expenses and ongoing operational expenses. They have to justify every dollar that they spend, and the stories of how they do that, how they succeed in telling their story to their fellow executives in order to get buy-off on the investment that has to be made, is both fascinating and very, very useful. So all of that's going to be going on Monday and Tuesday. So to get more information on that, all you have to do is head to informationweek.com. Obviously, you know how to do that or you wouldn't be listening to me. And then up at the top of the page, you'll see the little button between university and Interop that says Information Week Elite 100. Click on that. It will take you to all of the information you need about the Information Week Elite 100 conference. Now, I know that if you're listening to this particular episode, the time is drawing short for you to make your travel plans and get there. But if you've been wavering, going, well, you know what, maybe you're in California, maybe you're in Arizona, going, am I going to take a couple of days to go up and do this? You still have time. Registration is still open here on Friday, April 29th, for you to be able to make your plans. Get in there and get the best information from your peers on how they make IT happen at some of the largest and most successful companies in North America. Now, while that's happening, as I mentioned, the Interop conference is also going to be happening. And Interop is a great, great show. This is the 30th year of Interop. So for the last 30 years, professionals have been gathering to make sure that networking can happen the way it is supposed to. And by that, I mean that the pieces of the infrastructure that conform to the various standards, to the various protocols, can actually talk to one another. Now, this is one of those things that goes back in history, and we can all admit that 30 years ago, this was a much thornier issue than it is today. And to be brutally honest, when it comes to most facets of networking, you can count on them working together. If you buy components from Cisco, from HP, from Dell, from any of the other mainstream companies that are producing networking hardware, you can be relatively assured that it will at least pass packets back and forth with one another. And that was far from assured 30 years ago. But the latest developments in the world of networking have taken us beyond this sure and certain packet passing, because we're getting into software-defined networks, or as some people have styled them, virtual networks. I kind of like software-defined networks myself, because that's really what's going on. You know, you have the box of switches, the actual physical ports that make up the networking kit. But with SDN, you have the controller that tells each of those ports which network it belongs to, what kind of packets it's passing, who it's talking to. everything that is required to make it an efficient and effective networking, right down to things like network segmentation, so that, for example, the people who come onto your campus as guests don't have the opportunity to get into devices that are on your operational network. So all of that's going on. And the question of which controllers can talk to which physical switches is where we're once again right back in the middle of this big interoperability set of questions. Now, the people who come to Interop are eager to find out about this, and in many cases, they are actually putting together software-defined networks for their organization, which makes the sessions in the Interop conference and the people who are talking about the InteropNet network so important, because these two groups of people, the folks who are presenting in the conference and the folks who have put together the network, are the experts. These are people who know what the standards are. They know where the wiggle room is in those standards and how the different vendors are exploiting that wiggle room. And they also know how to put it together because they've done it. And that in and of itself, it makes them fairly specialized. You know, when you talk to companies these days, there are lots of them that have plans for interoperability, plans for software-defined networks, and they might even be doing a little bit of sandboxing. But when it comes to actually putting the networks together in a production environment, boy, those folks are really few and far between. That's why being able to talk to them, learn from them, and ask them questions is so rare and so important. That's what you can do at Interop. Now, to get more information on that, you can go over to interop.com, look for Interop 2016. You'll get all the information you want. And just as I said about the Information Week conference, I'll repeat it about Interop. It's not too late. There's still plenty of time to get your reservations made. Of all the cities in the country, Las Vegas is one that is set up for last-minute travel because, well, they want you to be impulsive when you come to their fair city. I don't know about impulsive, but if you've been on the fence, if you've been wondering about, you know, well, should I or shouldn't I, you should. Go ahead, make your plans, come out to Las Vegas, to the Mandalay Bay Convention Center, where you will find Interop Monday through Friday starting May 2nd. You know, one of the things I did real quickly want to talk about was the whole notion of why the software-defined networks are so important. And it really does, in many ways, get back to this notion of being able to make maximum use of the investment in infrastructure. You know, a decade ago, we started seeing companies making serious use of virtual servers. And they did that because they realized, based on the statistics that they were seeing, that even in a busy time of heavy application use, for most servers, the vast majority of their time was spent just cycling through, idling, if you will, on the CPU. So they said, well, hey, we can do much more with those idle cycles. So they came up with the idea of having more than one virtual server for each physical server. And today we know that at the top end of the Intel-based server market, hundreds of servers can be run virtually on each physical server. Well, the thing is that each of those virtual servers has their own networking requirements. And so with SDN, the network can respond at the same speed as the servers, which means that as servers are created and torn down, the network can be reallocated, redistributed, and redeployed to match. It's keeping everything as fast as possible. And as we all know, in today's world of IT, as fast as possible is often just barely fast enough. Well, speaking of just barely fast enough, I'm joined now by our international editor, Kelly Sheridan. Kelly, welcome to...
Hi, Kurt.
It is good to have you on the call with us. Now, remind us of where you are this month.
I am currently in Buenos Aires, and on Sunday I moved to La Paz, Bolivia.
So I take it that Buenos Aires is close to sea level. It's not, as I recall, in the mountains, but you're going way up in the mountains for the next stage of your global travels. Have you been running and doing things to try and become acclimated to the idea of living with less oxygen?
That's currently a hot topic of discussion. I think they recommend you take some vitamins and generally stay hydrated, but I'm not sure that there's any exercise you can do to prepare. I've never been in high altitudes, high enough to induce altitude sickness, so this will certainly be an experience. But I'm looking forward to seeing a new city.
Well, if you find yourself getting confused and disoriented, be sure to call in for next week's show because we want to hear it and make fun of you. Just keep that in mind.
Excellent.
Well, now, you are not going to be joining us in Las Vegas for the Information Week Elite 100 conference and Interop, and we're going to miss you, but I've got to ask, are there things going on in the world of IT that you think can keep you busy while the rest of the staff is there in the desert?
Absolutely. I'm also going to miss being with the team at Interop this year. It's certainly weird to not be joining you all in Las Vegas. But I will be keeping my eye on all things IT next week while you're all in, all out there. And I usually watch Microsoft and Apple both had pretty disappointing earnings calls over the last couple of weeks. And Microsoft has been consistently building up Windows 10, especially over the last couple of weeks, I've noticed. So I'm sure we'll see more on that front. We had a few Office updates this week. So I have a feeling they're going to keep the news cycle going over the next week while Interop is going on. So I'm going to keep one eye on that and one eye on everything that's coming out of Vegas.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Microsoft and Apple because it seems like, based on the news, that a lot of Apple's woes, if you can call them woes while they still make as much money as they made, came from not as many phones being sold as were sold last quarter or a year ago. Based on what you're hearing, is the consensus that most consumers are waiting for the iPhone 7 to come out, or is this the beginning of the end for Apple?
It's hard to say, and it really does depend on who you speak with. I think we're at a critical point in general for the smartphone market, and I think that Apple, it was easy to see this coming if you think back on just the products that they've come out with over the last several months. I was actually speaking to a formal Apple employee this morning, and he was saying that he sold his Apple stock last July, I think, because it was that early on that he could tell, you know, what kind of new innovations are going to be coming out over the next year or so. And honestly, I think we're at a point where people who have smartphones, the new features that Apple is coming out with in its new phones are not compelling enough, I would say. They're not innovative enough to drive upgrades. You know, I have an iPhone 6, and I don't see, based on the rumors I'm hearing about the iPhone 7, I don't know if I would be motivated to go out of my way to get one because the iPhone 6 does everything I need. So I think that Apple needs to either really come out with something new, which is difficult in such a saturated market, especially with premium smartphones, or maybe this is just the point at which they become, they're not like the big dog anymore, you know?
Well, they've certainly been used to being, as you put it, the big dog, being for much of the last couple of years the largest company in the world. But I agree with you. I have a 6 Plus. I didn't find the 6S Plus worth upgrading to. And I'm not eagerly anticipating the iPhone 7. I mean, I would love for them to surprise me and come out with a whole bunch of features that, you know, are worth trading in the 6 Plus 4, but like you, I haven't really heard anything. And I thought it was interesting because Carl Icahn, a very wealthy man, said that he has sold all of his Apple stock. And one of the fascinating things is that he says that Apple is still a good company. He thinks they're great. But his concern is what's going on in China. He doesn't think that that China is sufficiently stable to count on for a business. So it's interesting to hear different investors talk about different sources of worry when it comes to Apple.
And there are several sources of worry. I know that so with the iPhone X, they came out with a few weeks ago, they're trying to reach new users. But to do that, they lowered the price point to, I think it was $400. But there are so many other smartphones that are so much cheaper than that, maybe a half or a fraction of the price. And is the iPhone really compelling enough to drive sales for that market? You can't say.
Absolutely. And, you know, to me, one of the other interesting things is that, as you said, Microsoft also had a pretty bad quarter, but you don't hear anything like the same set of gloom and doom predictions about Microsoft based on this last quarter. Do you think that people have just already figured in all the gloom and doom, or is there something else at work that makes Microsoft's future seem a bit sunnier than the one down in Sunnyvale?
That's an interesting question. I think Microsoft in general for a lot of people is already associated with gloom and doom. A lot of people have, you know, put it on the back burner, especially in terms of the smartphone market. Before it came out with Windows 10, and ever since Windows 10, I think Microsoft has started to surprise some people. I think Windows 10, people obviously like it a lot more than they liked Windows 8, and then Microsoft came out with the Surface Pro, the Surface Pro 4, the Surface Book, all of this new hardware. So while their mobile division is still certainly struggling, I think people are kind of looking at Microsoft in more of a turnaround phase, especially under Nadella, who is obviously putting a lot of emphasis on cloud and really trying to boost that side of the business. I think people are seeing Microsoft in kind of a new light. So while their quarter was not wildly successful, I think that people are seeing Microsoft as sort of on a slow incline, whereas with Apple, you're talking about this company that is so huge and so important, and people have Apple on such a pedestal that for it to have its worst revenue, I think in, 13 years or something like that, I think that's a big shock. I think especially for, most people, so many people use iPhones. and to see Apple kind of take a huge turn for the worse, I think that's why it's generating so much attention.
I agree, and as you mentioned quite correctly, this is the first time that Apple has seen a decline in their revenue in 13 years, which is a pretty good run if you think about it. You know, another company that came out with their earnings in the last week or so was Amazon, and I thought it was very interesting that Amazon switched over from a loss to a profit largely on the back of AWS. So it's fascinating to me to see Amazon doing very well with their Amazon Web Services, AWS. Google obviously continues to do well based on their web services. Microsoft is doing, you know, as well as they are because of their switch to cloud. Do you think that there is any broader lesson here for some of the other companies in the industry? From what you're seeing, covering companies like Microsoft and their competitors, for the next few years at least, is there a real winning argument to be made for classic on-premise software that people install, buy the license for, and run on their own machines?
I think there is certainly a lesson to be learned here, and I do think I thought it was interesting, and this is sort of related to what you said. Apple saw a lot of success. I think one of the only areas of its success was its services business. It saw a lot of a strong demand for its software. So I think going forward, we'll see a lot of the focus turn away from, what's the next big camera in a smartphone or something like that. And we'll, I think Apple and a lot of other companies will be taking a closer look at the software that's.
You know, it really is interesting, and I think it's going to be fascinating because, you know, to be honest, even if you are using a lot of cloud services, at some point you have to have a device on your desk or in your hand, or if you're an enterprise, you have to have devices that sit in your data center to connect to everything else, to act as aggregators, to act as consumption devices, and yet the emphasis on those devices seems to have gone away. It will be interesting to see if sometime in the next year or so, someone, whether it's Apple or another company, can come up with a device that makes everyone much more interested in these things that we're using. You know, it's truly fascinating to me. I saw a number this last week that said that while everyone continues to talk about what a failure the Apple Watch is, the Apple Watch has sold more in its first year than Apple sold iPhones in its first year. So it's interesting as well to see how our definition of what a successful product is has changed at the same time that people or that companies seem to be getting out of the hardware business. We're defining success upwards to make it so that unless every third person on the face of the earth buys one, there's no point.
Yeah, I also heard that statistic, and I thought that was very interesting. I don't know if it's because so many people have iPhones and they're already huge Apple fans, and that's why they're picking up the Apple Watch. But I think that'll the wearable market in general is definitely something to keep an eye on over the next few years.
You know, I've got to ask you, the group that you are with this year, is this a group where there are a lot of people doing wearables? Is this one where there are a lot of people who are heavily smartphone dependent? How is device usage in this group? Because I assume that most of the people in this group are going to be, let's call it people who haven't yet earned their AARP card. So they're likely to be device users for some time to come. What kind of device use do you see in the group that you're spending time with?
I think to say smartphone dependent would be an understatement. everybody here has at least one smartphone, if not two, you know, just in case of backup. Several people are using tablets as second screens. There are a few Apple Watches in the group. I think it's a very connected group, which makes sense since everybody is working remotely. It's interesting because in most of the places, or in many of the places we're traveling to, it's hard to get access to the products that are so easy to get to back home. For example, I'm in Argentina, and you cannot get an iPhone anywhere. So if you have an iPhone and you're reliant on that, you have to either bring a backup with you or have someone, like a visitor or someone, bring one down from the United States. So it's very interesting from my perspective to learn how inaccessible certain technologies are in different parts of the world. And I think it's interesting for everyone being the connected group that we are.
Well, I look forward every week to hearing about your adventures. I think it's fascinating what you're doing and what you're learning about the idea of mobile work around the world. We appreciate you being our global correspondent here for Information Week Live, as well as doing your day job of keeping up with Microsoft and Apple and the rest of that crowd for Information Week. Now, you said that you're going to keep your eye on those companies while everyone else on the team is in the desert next week. What kind of stories do you have lined up, or what is on the horizon that you think is going to be interesting for the next week?
Well, I can't say anything specifically, but I know that Microsoft does have some productivity-related news coming out next week, and I'm looking forward to sharing more on that. Right now, that's the only concrete thing that I have on my agenda, but I'm sure that the tech world will keep me very busy next week while the team is at Interop, and I wish you all the best of luck, and I so would be there with you for this.
Well, we will miss seeing you, but we're grateful that you're going to be holding down the fort from afar. Now, I know that one of the things you're going to be doing from all of your mobile devices and while we're down in the desert is keeping up on social media. So how can people follow you and keep up with you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter, where my handle is Kelly Sheridan, last name Sheridan 22.
Well, everybody ought to do that. It's a great Twitter feed. And Kelly, thanks so much for taking time out of a busy day to be with us today.
Thanks for having me, Kurt.
And as for me, I'm going to be doing all kinds of things from the Information Week Conference and then from Interop. I'll be at the Information Week Conference Monday and Tuesday, switching over to Interop for Wednesday and Thursday. You can keep up with me on Twitter at KG4GWA. I'm going to be trying some new things. Of course, Periscope, I'm going to be doing. Also, it looks like I'm going to be doing some stuff with Facebook Live. So look for me to have some videos and other things on the various social media next week, as well as articles on Information Week and lots of tweets coming across on Twitter. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to follow us. We hope that you'll be back again with us next week. I will tell you that next Friday's show is going to be one that's pre-recorded because we're going to have the gang together in one place out in Las Vegas. I'm going to take advantage of that opportunity to have several people talk to us here on Information Week Live. Well, for Kelly Sheridan and everyone else here at Information Week Live, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for listening. Hey, we'll see you next time.